I'm Rick Moore, and this is Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore, brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, and by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. All right, back now, and very happy to be joined once again by Dustin Luca of the Salem News. And I you know, this thing is ingrained in me, the Salem Evening News. I'm sorry, man. It just, that goes back so far with me. But anyway, it's the Salem News now. Do I have that right?
You do. But I mean, if you're walking around downtown, you look at the Adriatic Building, I think it is downtown, there still is a Salem Evening News sign on it. The full name is still ingrained, you know?
You know it. It is. You're going to find that out when you get down the road a few decades, some of the things. Anyway, let's get to the stories here. The thing that pops out, right away today in today's edition of the Salem News is, a Federal Street condo trial. What is that all about, Dustin?
So this is a really interesting one. I've had a chance to write about it a couple times. Basically, there's a three-unit building on Federal Street, which is part of it's called the McIntyre Historic District. It's, you know, a lot of really high-end homes and, you know, associated with past shipbuilders and things like that. This one particular building, since it was built, I think, in 1880, if I remember correctly, had, like, a grocery store on the first floor. In the 90s, that became a florist shop. And it had these various uses that on the first floor always had to do with business of some kind, and then floors two and three were residential. In 2014, somebody tried turning it into kind of like a real estate design kind of place, and neighbors within the Federal Street neighborhood rose up against it, basically saying, you know, the business has been empty for years, so anything you do there is going to be bringing extra traffic, extra cars, extra parking needs. And they sued, and they actually managed to successfully get the business effort shut down, which then prompted somebody who lives elsewhere in the historic district to say, hey, I can buy that and turn it into a residence because, you know, they just sued to stop a business going in. Clearly a residence might go, and the neighborhood rose up against that, too.
So okay.
That got appealed in 2016. The trial is finally starting this week, 4 years later. One of the things that keeps coming up with this is people are looking at it and going, okay, so the neighborhood didn't want the business there, they don't want the residential there, so what exactly can go in there? And that's kind of where a lot of people are scratching their heads as the lawsuit starts to play out.
Does this have to do with zoning laws?
Yeah, and so what it boils down to, that part of the district is known as R2, which basically means it'll support single-family residences and most notably two-family residences. One of the arguments that are coming out in court, and I think that this is something that the guy who, you know, wants to build a unit in there and has to kind of address, is that basically by putting a residence on the first floor, then it becomes a three-family building, and that's not necessarily something that pops up that much in the R2 zone. Just, you can think about, it's designed for two-family, now you've got a three-family, and it kind of creates these kind of precedents. But one of the things, if you noted in the story that I wrote this morning, is one of the people who are testifying admitted to the fact that there's a ton of three, you know, family buildings throughout the neighborhood already. So it's really tough to tell kind of where it's going to be going, but it certainly has a lot of people scratching their heads and kind of watching to see what happens with it, because it kind of gets into these questions of property use. I mean, the guy who's trying to, you know, turn it into a condo paid $107,000 for it. So it's kind of like, what are you allowed to do with your property, you know?
Well, you can find this story on the front page of today's Salem News, and I will link to it. And man, Dustin, you do find some interesting stuff. I got to hand it to you. So, you know, and I miss your tweets from some of these live situations with the schools and so on, because those are entertaining. Speaking of which, what's the school situation right now from your vantage point?
Right now, so this past week, they actually brought a number of students back. Their thinking was, and this is kind of something, this is a drum that you're seeing beat kind of all over the country right now. People are basically saying schools aren't spreader places for the virus. And it looks like the data is actually panning out on that, you know, basically infection doesn't spread through the schools the way people were expecting it to. Even a couple of weeks ago, Governor Charlie Baker said that it was probably a mistake to shut all the schools down last spring. So what they did this past week, they brought back everybody up to grade two, though families, if they have like a first grader or something, can still be remote if they wanted to. And they're hoping as the next couple of months go on that they can add grade three, grade four, they can go on up into the middle school and the high school and kind of get everybody back at some point. They also made a decision this week to basically scrap snow days this year. And I kind of, when COVID started becoming a thing and everybody started working remotely and all the pieces started gelling together, I started kind of wondering if this is basically going to be an end to the snow day, because if you think about, you know, if you can't actually safely get to the school, you can just work remotely from home, and now they actually have systems set up for that. So they're thinking with getting rid of snow days in Salem this year is that they can actually kind of get kids out a little sooner, not have all these days to make up at the end of the calendar. They can just kind of keep going with the calendar as the snow days hit, because they'll be, you know, working from home.
And what's the deal with MCAS? I think it was suspended in most schools last spring. Are they already looking at that now?
So I don't know what's going on at the state level with that. I haven't had a chance to dig into it, but the school committee in Salem on Monday voted to send a very, very strongly worded resolution to the state, basically saying, hey, we shouldn't do MCAS this year just because of the learning loss from, you know, the kids having to figure out how to work remotely and everything like that. It is just basically where all the students would be right now and where they would perform on MCAS has, you know, taken a hit, obviously, because of COVID. So they're basically arguing, let's, you know, this is not the time for something like this. You know, assessment tools are always valuable to see how you're doing, but during a global pandemic with all these kind of wild cards up in the air, it's really not a great idea.
Hey, in your coverage, this is kind of an off-the-rail question, but anything unusual or weird that you've picked up in terms of the school coverage? And what I'm thinking of is, like, what happens when you lose electricity? A kid's a Wi-Fi goes down or something like that. Is it sort of just held, you know, accounted for like a day absent type thing?
So I know that that's the question that they're grappling with right now. When the superintendent, Steve Zreich, presented his plan this past week, one of the things he mentioned is like, yeah, and we recognize that there's a number of students who come into the building because they don't have access to the internet at home, and there's all these different things they get. So they're working on finding a way to get around that. And obviously that's an issue that, especially in Salem, hits students of color more than, you know, Caucasian students, because it's just, you know, they don't have the same access to technology and things like that. The school district has put together a lot of programs to try to basically get internet access into these homes, you know, through vouchers with Comcast and things like that and hotspots. So they're working on it. They're issuing Chromebooks to try to help them. But there is still a certain portion of the population that is having difficulty, you know, kind of getting online from home, though that number keeps getting smaller and smaller. That is something that is, you know, is coming up, you know, though, when they're talking about getting rid of snow days, because obviously if the kids are home because they don't have anything, you know, and they don't have a way of getting online, that's going to create an issue.
Now, Salem State, have they been, they've had in-class attendance at Salem State?
They have for, and this actually kind of makes sense if you think about the different kinds of classes that might require in-person stuff, like science labs. The, you know, if you're going through kind of geology and having to do a lot of things with rocks and things like that, that's a little tough to do remotely. So classes that kind of require that kind of in-person thing are still going forward. And I think I remember about 30% of Salem State's classes were in person. The rest were all remote. Next week, they are actually going to be going 100% remote just for the Thanksgiving weekend so that kids can get tested this week and next week and have results in hand that are still good by the time they have to go home to their families for Thanksgiving.
Well, it's good to know because, I mean, some schools can't, some colleges aren't having any in-person stuff. So the fact that that's working is excellent. And again, these articles are all available at Salem, on Salem News. I will connect a link to some of them. Finally, Dustin, sort of a mystery as to what's going on with the Salem Fire Department, but you reported that some staff have been out with COVID, but probably not affecting the workforce too badly.
Yeah, and this was a kind of a weird one to try to nail down, and I was actually working on this one all of last week and all of this week. Basically, we had heard that there was an outbreak at the fire department, and it turned out that that's not actually the case. There was, either somebody told me there were just a few cases or there were only three cases. And they couldn't say, like, what building they were in, if they were even in the same building, or maybe it's, like, one in Engine House 4, one's in House 2, or something like that. But apparently the individuals who did get COVID are, you know, they're quarantining, they're getting better. The department, you know, several of the firefighters went through COVID testing after the fact just as a precaution, and no other tests came up positive as a result of that. So they know they were able to basically kind of crush that one pretty quickly.
Well, speaking of testing, that's something you've been covering for a while, and I'm sure you'll continue to. What's the latest on testing in Salem?
They are asking everybody to test at least once every couple of weeks just to basically have that whole 14-day incubation period nailed down to see who's getting it, where it's coming from, and things like that. The city is calling it November, and no is spelled K-N-O-W, the idea being that you know what's going on in your community. So they've got the free testing 6 days a week at the high school with kind of alternating times based on the day. And then they've got 5 days of testing also downtown at Old Town Hall. And they're basically asking everybody if you can find a way to get to the testing sites at least once every couple of weeks, just to basically, even if you're not getting exposed to anybody, just to kind of keep tabs on, kind of help the community at least keep tabs on kind of where the virus is popping up, how much it's spreading, and things like that. Because Salem kind of has a kind of skyrocketing infection rate right now. It's quadrupled in the past couple of weeks. But the actual percentage of tests that are testing positive is still low, so that's why the city is kind of being called yellow by the state instead of red. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is because of the amount of testing that they're doing to aggressively find out where the virus is and how to kind of keep it at tabs.
Okay, you guys aren't publishing on Tuesdays and Saturdays. And my being a digital immigrant instead of a native like yourself, what do I look for on these Tuesdays and Saturdays online? What are you doing? What is the paper doing?
So basically, just to help save costs, we have, you know, cut the Tuesday and Saturday editions. And I know that, the public is really interested in trying to get that back, and we're kind of working on getting there. But as you can imagine, every business has been hit really hard by COVID. We're still on Tuesdays and Saturdays publishing to the website. So basically the website itself, salemnews.com, hasn't changed at all throughout this. It's just, you can't get a paper at CBS or anything on those 2 days.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Dustin, anything else you want to mention?
Nope, that's it. Have a great day.
All right, that's Dustin Lucas, Salem News. I'm Rick Moore. This is MSO News Sports. This has been Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore. Brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. Connect with Connections by emailing msonewsports@gmail.com.